What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
Yeah, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. I would love to go around the NFL, but bump that right now. When you get the opportunity to talk to the offensive coordinator of the Houston Texans, you take that opportunity, and that's exactly what we're about to do. Nick Caley sitting down with us here at Houston Texas training camp. Nick, how's it going, man?
It's going good, man. How about you guys?
Terrific. Absolutely terrific. Go ahead.
I mean, we've heard a ton about the energy and excitement that you bring out here, man. Like, how have you enjoyed the ways that at least your team has responded to the you know, camp and been able to, kind of get work done thus far?
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, like camp like anything else, but it's we have great energy. The guys are coming to work every day. That's all you can ask for. Try to have fun. Try to keep pushing each other. The guys, you know, got a great group of people, and that makes it's people that makes the play. So players, coaches, you know, long way to go, but making progress.
And obviously, you know, offensive coordinator, we've all talked about your experience and where you've been. My question was this: like, anytime you get to that seat, you know, you're not, yep, you're the guy making the calls. As much as you're influenced here and you're influenced there, you kind of like to put your own stamp on things,
sure,
too. You know, how has that been going for you in terms of, I mean, again, you don't have to like necessarily we're going to do this, but in terms of putting your own stamp and some of the things you like to do on this offense?
Yeah, I think, well, first and foremost, I think it's a philosophy. I think everything that we try to do, we want to do to put our players in the best position possible. Not every one player is the same. Mm-hmm. But I would say the overriding philosophy, starting with, is being, you know, a fundamentally sound physical outfit that'll play, you know, good situational football and be mentally tough. So everything we're doing, you know, really starts with that.
Mm-hmm. All right, so I want to talk a little bit about myself, which I might do too much, but this is my first time being able to cover camp, and one of the things I've been asking a lot of the players is, like, what's kind of the advice, what's some of the things that they've had early on in, in camp that they've appreciated for camp? Like, is there a piece of advice that you've given or a piece of advice that you've gotten about, you know, operating in training camp and especially maybe even for you as a first-time play caller?
Yeah, I think just being totally present day by day, not looking beyond the day that you're at, trying to, you know, improve your fundamentals and just stack positive days. Refine fundamentals, whether that's releases, whether that's hand placement in the run game. Doing things like that and then building off of, you know, what we're doing schematically, like trying to, you know, obviously have compliments to the things that we're doing, and, mm-hmm, and that starts with just establishing a foundation, which we did in spring.
Yeah.
We reestablished that here at the start of training camp, and now we're trying to improve the things that, you know, mm-hmm, might show up and refine some of the details here to carry us forward.
How do you keep yourself from getting sped up? Obviously, you are a guy who cares a lot about fundamentals. I've heard you mention that a lot of times.
Yeah.
But also, it can be very easy to get to a space where I want to get to the place where we're doing the things that we ultimately want to get to. How do you keep yourself from getting sped up?
Yeah, just remind ourselves that, look, every good play begins and ends with good fundamentals. So if you're going to put in 1,000 things, but you can't get past, you mm-hmm, know, the 100 level of, you know, hitting blocks the proper way, identifying,
right,
the mic point, you know, aligning properly when you break the huddle, like, then you're just going to, there's going to be a bucket that just continues to overflow. So
Yeah. There's
a progression to it all, like anything else. And, you know, I believe that starts, you know, the early part of training camp, the early part of off-season program, and then
yeah,
you stack it from there. And you assess it every day. Like,
sure,
you know, you can hit pause. You don't have to just continue to plow through an installation. If you feel like you need to take a break, then you have a review day and you stack days and you tweak things as you go.
Have you had to do those?
We manage. After about 3 or 4 days, you know, you're always juggling things around, moving things up, maybe pushing things back a little bit. So that's normal.
One of the things that I always find interesting by a leader, and obviously you're leading the offense, is I don't have all the answers. You know, I'm collaborating.
Sure.
So I wanted to kind of get your thoughts on, because, you know, we all know your background, you know,
yep,
tight ends, offensive line, passing coordinator, et cetera.
Yep.
But Cole Popovich, Gerard Johnson bring different backgrounds?
Sure.
What has that collaboration been
like? It's been great. I mean, I don't have all the answers. You know, you rely on, you know, it's about people, and we have a great staff of guys, and I truly believe that we're trying to collectively do this, you know, with every one of our guys at the forefront of every single decision we make. So we talk through things. We poke holes in things. Obviously, we have a philosophy that we established when I came here, things that I want to do. But there's also things that these guys have done really well, too, that you don't just throw them away. They're they're good at certain things, and they've had success at certain things. And there's also guys that have experiences, you know, in other systems and bring some unique perspective to the table. And I think that's the beauty of a staff. It's not about me. It's not about any one person. It's about, honestly, collectively doing what's right for the team and trying to get better every day.
Now, we talk about relationships as we're sitting here talking to Nick Caley, the offensive coordinator of your Texans. And, I mean, the man who previously held your position was one of D'Amico's friends. And now, I don't know how much of a relationship you've had prior, but how has that working relationship started to kind of coalesce with D'Amico?
Yeah, it's been great. I mean, he's consistent and fair every single day. He's a great person, a great leader. You know, he's been in the same position that I've been in, you know, at one point as a first-time coordinator. So that's it's been good getting to discuss certain things, certain situations as we go. You know, growing every day, he pours into everybody. It's been an awesome experience getting to work with him.
One thing D'Amico has said is, you know, everybody's talking about the offensive line for obvious reasons. It's, you know, some new faces and such. And he said there's going to come a point, I'm paraphrasing, but he said there's going to come a point where we're going to have our group and we're going to want them to get reps together. I'm sure you're in that same boat, but, you know, where does that light bulb happen, and how do you judge, like, okay, I think this is the group?
I think it naturally progresses everywhere I've been. I mean, I feel like, you know, at some point in the first couple weeks, things start to sort themselves out. There's a level of consistency. Some guys will be a little bit more consistent, you know, in their role, their respective role. So you assess that, you look at it, and you find the most consistent players that, you know what you're getting out of every single day. And, you know, that starts to, you know, manifest itself right around the second week sometimes. And sometimes it's later. There's position battles that always happen, but you know,
you know it's going to happen. You're feeling 100%, good about it.
Yeah, definitely.
Nick, do you ever go over to Matt and give him a little, you know, elbow and like, hey, 51-55, can you tell him to chill out a little bit so my guys can get a little bit of
Control? No, he turns it loose every single day. He's a great coordinator. We got a great defense. It makes us better. They give us great challenging looks from day to day, but it's great. It's going to make us better.
Now, this is, you know, we haven't talked about C.J. Stroud at all, and it's new. You know, he wanted control, more control, I should say. He's getting more control. He's making calls. What has that progression been like? Because it seems like even from where we're sitting, we're starting to see some things.
Yeah, no, he's been great. He's attacked it. He's had a great attitude. He loves football. And, you know, he comes to work every day. He asks great questions. He has a great mind for the game. So he's been all in, and I've been very pleased with everything that he's brought to the table. I really have. I enjoy working with him.
Something I know that you probably think a lot, especially when we ask you questions, is how much less we know about football than you guys. And so if you could help me out, like, we've all been very interested in getting in the mind of CJ, especially as he's getting ready to, you know, have these plays out here. And it's obviously there's more of it.
Sure.
Can you take us inside, like, can you give us some insight into what's the workload with CJ in the huddle, pre-snap, and maybe even when that play gets going?
Oh, I mean, I think there's a lot to it. I think it starts, obviously, in the classroom. I mean, you start learning the plays. You learn the intent of the plays. But there's a lot of mechanics. I mean, you're sitting there. You're getting the grouping in. He's receiving the play. He's calling the play. We're obviously setting the table, whether it's, you know, adjusting anything based on the mic points, you know, coordination with the line, motions, movements, anything like that. He's obviously, it starts with him, and then, you know, getting to go when the ball snapped. I mean, he's a great processor, and, you know, we're trying to, again, that goes down to putting our guys in position to make plays, and he does a good job of getting everybody involved.
Another thing with this offense, again, from the 8 days that we've been out here, I'm really fascinated with the tight ends. I think there's a lot of options there. I think there's, and this is me talking, you know. So I think this is something that traditionally, you know, a Patriot-style offense, for lack of a better way, has used a lot of tight ends. Do you, in your mind's eye, how do you visualize the tight ends position working out?
Yeah, I mean, I've been very pleased with him. I think Jake Moreland's done an exceptional job. I think he's an outstanding tight end coach and a coach in general. But he's done a great job with that group. They've all improved. I think we have a very good room, a deep room, all a little different, which is good. And I think you can utilize different strengths, you know, accordingly. And I'm excited. I think, you know, no question. I feel like, again, I've said this before, maybe a little biased, but, you know, when you have tough tight ends, when you have versatile tight ends, that's the straw that stirs the drink. That's a position group that can truly enhance toughness. It can, you know, add, you know, different elements in the C and D gap area, run pass conflict, et cetera. And I think, you know, we have a good room of really good players that that are really good team guys, and I've been very pleased with them.
As we're working on, you know, having this offensive line get themselves to a place where they can execute the things, I know you like running the football. I know you like 12 personnel sets. I know that there's going to be, you know, big strength on that offensive line. What are the improvement points that we're looking at right now for this line?
I mean, everything just starts fundamentally, and this isn't cliche. I mean, it does. Like, every day we sit there and look at it, it's like, okay, are we hitting double teams the right way? Are we getting split on them? Well, there's less of that. You know, we're staying connected on double teams. We're fitting combination blocks better. You know, we're coordinating and communicating cleaner, more consistently across the front to set the table for certain things, whether that's protection, whether that's run game, targeting, and all those things. So it's a work in progress. We're making progress. They're working their tails off, and, you know, I've been pleased with the growth. Got a ways to go, but we're working hard every day to get there.
I'm sensing that you're very comfortable in this job, and I'm curious. What I wanted to ask you about is the actual play calling. You've called plays in the NFL before. I'm guessing they've never handed you like a preseason game or something.
No,
because a lot of coaches do that.
Some do. Yeah. No, it has not happened. I've in practice opportunities and stuff like that. Yeah. We've obviously had opportunities to call it.
So that's what you're excited about.
Yeah, I am. But it starts with having good people too. I'm going to learn some things on the way. I'm going to there's going to be some bad calls along the way too, and I'm going to learn from them and grow from them. And that's the whole idea, is just to continue to get better myself. Same thing we ask the players. I got to ask it myself.
Yeah. So you're looking forward to Minnesota.
I'm looking forward to it. Yeah. I'm looking forward to just tomorrow starting there, and then, you know, before we move on from there. But yeah,
it's been a pretty good split all the way across your quarterback room. And I know for us, we were looking at it, and I mean, from our uninformed information, we're like, hey man, I would love to see CJ get a lot of reps to get a feel for this. Is there a reason why you kind of really have a really strong balance? Is there maybe like some mental reps things happening where he's sitting off? Or
no, I think it's a progression that is a part of the rep distribution that we have to the start of the camp, and that's just the sequencing of that, start of camp, building the reps, and then I think you'll start to see an influx of that, those guys getting reps as camp progresses.
I got one more for you, and that is just in general the offense. I said this to a buddy of mine. I said, I because everybody's asking about the Texans in this city. I said, I could see where this is an offense that maybe isn't as spectacular but more efficient than I've seen lately. Is efficiency kind of a catch word for you in terms of just getting it done?
Yeah, I mean, I think you want to go forward. You want to get, you want to stay out of second and long situations, third and long situations, and that starts on first and second down. So, completion, completing balls, catch and run opportunities, whatever that might be, just positive plays, efficient runs in the run game, just staying on task and staying on track is the biggest thing.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of work stuff that we've talked about, a lot of football stuff. Have you given yourself any time to explore the city, play some golf, things like that? Or is it just like it's such an intense...
We got done with OTAs. My wife and kids moved out here, from L.A. out here middle of June. And I got four little girls under the age of eight. They keep me on my toes every single day. So no,
four.
I got four. Yeah, I'm going to be... Four girls, yeah. So it's a lot sometimes, but my wife's she's a warrior, and she holds it down.
That's four dance lessons. That's four projects.
exactly right. But no, they're sweet. So we spend time when I get an opportunity to catch our breath, and I'm a dad.
Very good. Yeah. And then one more thing, because I know for me, for a football player, I've realized that there's certain things, like certain characteristics that I gravitate towards. Like, you give me a fast guy, and I'm in love, right? What is the characteristics that endear a player to Nick Caley?
Yeah, dependable, consistent, tough. You know what you're getting out of them every day. The moment's not too big, and they're unselfish.
Yeah.
Very much. I get it, and I love it. Nick, it's been a great pleasure to get to meet you. Hopefully
likewise.
We get to talk again.
Likewise.
And best of luck with those four girls.
Hey, thank you very much.
That's what's resonating with me.
That's right. I'm like, how many hands do you have that they can paint? I feel like you only got...
Not enough.
They will, by the way. They will.
Yeah.
That's Nick Caley, offensive coordinator of your Houston Texans.
Thank you, guys. Have a good day.
Loop on Sports Radio 610.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. we host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
Lopez, man, that guy's all business.
All business. And you could kind of tell from my questions where I was going, you know, trying to get a good feel for things. I could see where I don't think this team wants to make as many mistakes as last year, like negative plays. And D'Amico has said it, so it's not like it's a unique thought to me. But I could see where they're going to use a lot of tight ends. That's what I was really – because we've talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I could see them using a lot of tight ends. They've talked about running the ball a lot. You know, less can be more. You know, especially when you have a defense this good. I think I was talking to you about this off the air a little bit, and certainly during passing thoughts. Like, with this defense, you don't have to be, hey, you know, CJ, it's 3rd and 27. Go make some magic. You don't ever want to get into 3rd and 27. You know, every play needs to be a little positive.
No, I mean, and that's one of the things that's going to be incredibly necessary for this team, is to find yourself not in 3rd and long. I mean, you know, I know that they have really fast guys. CJ's a great thrower of the football.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you need to keep yourself out of those adversarial situations.
Yeah.
Especially, I don't know, he didn't seem to bite back at the idea of, like, maybe not being as spectacular of an offense. But I imagine that, you know, you don't want to have to test that nearly as much.
I think that's where I was going to – that's what I was kind of digging in. And I think that's what they're going to be. And I like it. I mean, you know, how many times were we just slapping our forehead, you know, they have a negative – play on first down of 6 or 7 yards.
You got to get there, though. Yeah. And I mean, look,
offensive line, man.
I've got to be honest. Tell me if you think I'm wrong here. There's a level of frustration. That's a man coming right off the practice field, and I felt like there was a level of frustration. This was not a day that the offense won.
No,
I'll say that.
Yeah,
there was a little bit of meat at the quarterback when it came to the offensive line, but secondary was blowing them up. It seems like CJ didn't have like the best of days. I know you were talking about like in 7-on-7s,
yeah,
he's being accurate.
Yeah.
It seemed like that did not necessarily translate in the same way,
et cetera.
So we were getting a man who I imagine was a little frustrated coming off the field, but he still seems to have a level of belief in what they're doing. Fundamentals will still be harped on. I wonder how far he continues to harp on fundamentals, because obviously it matters here, and if you're feeling like you're not executing your way, I imagine that is also the coaching point. I do wonder if it's like week 14, it's like, hey, guys, don't forget, we're making sure to hit fundamentals here, or if that's something that's indicative of where they are as a team right now.
I think they're trying to realize what they can do best, but when your offensive line is sort of in flux, and that's another thing we talked with him about, you know, at what point are you going to say, all right, this is our five, and then you maybe get a little better because they're getting reps together consistently, and they know, you know, they know that they're the starting five.
Yeah, I mean, that's a man with a lot on his shoulders, a lot to think about, Nick Caley. And today's going to be a day where I imagine that meeting is going to be pretty robust in talking about what this offense needs to continue to do to make themselves a good and serviceable one headed into the 2025 football season. All right, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, I am kind of sad that we are only just now getting to talk to a trade deadline has come and passed for the Houston Texans. 3 acquisitions, all of them bats, no arms. Did you like what the Astros rather did at the trade deadline? 713-572-4610. Let's talk about it next.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
Again, appreciation to Nick Caley, offensive coordinator of the Houston Texans, for sitting down with us after practice here, day 8 at the Houston Methodist Training Center. And look, I will give him some grace. That man was coming right off the field of a not great day, so I appreciate him giving us the answers that we were ultimately able to get in that conversation.
Yeah, he wanted to get back into that building, but he was good enough. And we had some interesting things to call from that that I'm sure we're going to be talking about here as we move forward. But, yeah, you know, when you and it wasn't as bad as yesterday, as day before yesterday. But it wasn't great.
No.
It was in the neighborhood. So he, you know, there's frustration. I think they're confident. You could sense that, you know, in what they're doing, what they're trying to establish, some of the personnel that they're starting to get together and believe in. But they're still facing just a monster of a defense that is making life hard on them.
Yeah, speaking of confidence, Dana Brown, in talking to the media, he spent 20 minutes after the trade deadline was completed and the Astros acquired three bats. We talked about Ramon Urias. And then they added, they did indeed bring back Carlos Correa. And then they add Jesus, and of course I forget his name as soon as I, Sanchez. There we go. I was about to call him Jesus Salazar, and I was like, that's not his name. Jesus Sanchez, an outfielder. Those are the three new Houston Astros at the deadline. No arms, notably, but Dana Brown was very confident in his comments to the assembled media. But the question that I have, are you happy with how the trade deadline played out for your Houston Astros? 713-572-4610.
I'm curious on your thought. I'm not going to say thrilled. I'm very happy. There's one little bitty sort of fly in the ointment that needs to be ironed out. But let's talk about the really good stuff that happened. I mean, it's impossible not to love the day that the Astros had. I mean, they solidified third base, which we found out the last couple of days that Isak Paredes is pretty much done for the year. 6 to 7 months.
And from the horse's mouth, Dana Brown, when asked about if Isak Paredes would play again this year, said, you know, we could tell you that the injury was more significant than we anticipated. Obviously, Paredes still looking for a second opinion. And basically, Dana Brown was like, once that second opinion comes in, we'll be able to tell you more, which is basically, hey, we're not going to officially say, but once we can get through a second medical situation, then we'll be able to tell you that, we're not expecting to see this man for a good amount or basically for the remainder of the season.
So let's talk about all the good things that's happened. It was like just about perfect. You got that. You got the third baseman with Correa. Not only that, but he's a true clubhouse leader that has been there and done that and certainly will immediately influence an already well-established clubhouse. You also got the left-handed bat that we all talked about, et cetera. You also got Urias, who can just give you depth. And also, I feel this is important, give Joe Espada some flexibility across the lineup and in late innings. You know, you've heard me in the last few days, last week or so, and the late innings, that bottom of the lineup, it made me nervous, made me a little uncomfortable. I think it affected this team. Well, you got that now. Like you've got that covered. Everything that you could have hoped for, and I know the cost was relatively high, but not as high as it could have been because they were looking for $50 million.
Correa?
Yeah. The Astros were looking for them to take $50 million. They only took 33.
Correct.
But nevertheless, you got just about everything, except, and this is the fly in the ointment, the pitcher. But do you have those pitchers on the way? You got five guys that are out there right now. Spencer Arrighetti, Luis Garcia, Christian Javier, J.P. France, Sean Dubin is a reliever that are all slated to begin early August. What month is it again today? August.
It is early August, August 1st. Again, make sure you pay your rent.
So do they have those guys, you know, on? Do they feel good about those guys stepping in and getting it done?
Well, of course, according to Dana Brown, and when it comes to return to play, return to baseball, you take whatever you will with a grain of salt. But he did say that, and he was putting pretty – this seems like a fairly hard date from Dana Brown. Arrighetti next week, Javier behind him, Garcia behind him was just a quick paraphrase of what he said to the media yesterday. Arrighetti next week feels like a very hard, situation there. Like, you are going to get Arrighetti in the next calendar week.
Yeah.
And so, with that being the case, like, that is a third pitcher that you feel strongly about.
Yes.
Although, I don't know how long you can expect him to throw. Like, are you expecting him to throw five or six?
If they can get five or six, I'd be thrilled. I would think they're going to try to shoot for that. And here's another thing.
And after that, the idea of, you know, this one after, you know, Javier behind him, Garcia behind them. I almost read that on almost like weeks, like, hey, another week and another week.
Yeah.
But that's not inherent. That's just kind of the way that I heard it.
Yeah, and keep this in mind. You know, the Astros were looking at Dylan Cease, so maybe they, you know, that was just covering themselves, getting another big-time pitcher in. But the Padres wanted Arrighetti, and they said, no, They wanted, so maybe there's a
and three prospects and on prospects. Top of Arrighetti.
So maybe it was a case of, look, we feel good about Arrighetti or Luis Garcia or a combination of those and J.P. France, but we don't want Dylan Cease enough to get rid of those guys.
Yeah, ultimately Dana was saying that what it came down to was the bats were a priority. They wanted to address pitching, but the arms were too expensive.
Yeah,
and that's something that we kind of talked about to some degree. Is just if you were going to get a starting pitcher that's too expensive. The secondary question I have to that though is, so did they forego the notion of pen guys?
Well, I think that what they're looking at and counting on is, at least if they could just, what did I say, just bat 300 on these pitchers coming back. If you get one, two maybe pitchers that can be contributors, and I know that's more than 30%, but you can get one or two pitchers that maybe contribute, then your bullpen becomes automatically better with some of the guys that you have already.
It's going to need to because Ryan Gusto goes out in that trade that brings in Sanchez to the outfield. I'm still trying to figure out how much I like this. I do like this from the perspective of the bats needed to be better.
Mm-hmm.
You needed to be able to bring in...
And a left-hander.
You needed to bring in constructive at-bats, especially with Alvarez, who has been fundamental to what you were doing.
Yeah.
And the level of flexibility, as you mentioned, with the left-hander. Sanchez is going to be able to play when you need a left-handed bat. It seems like that's the plan of what they're going to do.
Yeah.
They're going to have him play left field when you need him in the lineup. And Altuve will play a lot more second base down the stretch. And he'll also, as Dana mentioned, Sanchez will play a little right field to give Cam Smith some rest, which I think is much needed. This is the longest season of baseball that he's played.
Yeah.
I think him and Correa are going to be the guys that factor in the lineup. And I think those guys matter in addition to a Jeremy Pena that I would anticipate plays probably tonight, this weekend in Boston. I think that will – I love that in order to get – some offense to help these pitchers, especially because that's also part of helping your pen is making sure that you have some runs so that they're not in high leverage situations every time they take them.
No, I like it a lot, but it does lead to another question, because I think the reason that the trade deadline was so active, this was a very active trade deadline across the league. I think everybody thinks they have a shot. I think there's no team that has completely separated itself from everyone else. So everyone's trying to get that final piece, those final pieces, to kind of go over the top. So let me ask you this. Did the Astros do enough to maybe be the boogeyman again? Because they have Correa back, they have some players back, they got a left-handed bat, maybe they'll get some pitchers back. Or because everybody else was making moves, is it still wide open?
No, I don't think that they're boogeyman status yet. And of course, I say that with the understanding that they have been the zombie Astros and they've been able to make things shake. But I don't think that I looked at what they added and I was like, okay, now they are the ones that everybody needs to become. They didn't become the hunted. Yeah. I don't know that I viewed it that way. Carlos Correa coming back is solid. The defense is still something that I'm looking to see how valuable that is.
Yeah.
And I guess maybe the question with Correa is more into the future, right? Like next year, where do you play him?
Yeah.
And that is a valid question
where
that's worth asking.
Where do you play him?
I don't know, unless maybe you want to trade on Isak Paredes after, trade high, sell high there. I've seen someone even mention that trading Pena would not necessarily be entirely out of the question in some people's perspectives. I don't even know how much I want to engage with that at this moment.
Yeah.
There are some things that you could possibly do, but I understood the need to make it happen right now. I still wonder if that cost isn't a lot, but I get what you're getting back when it comes to a leader, a guy who helps the clubhouse, and also a guy that jazzes up and juices up the city. As you mentioned, there's people out here on the field to start practice today talking about Correa being back in town.
Yeah, no, I went to that nerdy Reggie Atitula, what'd you pay for the trade, who won the trade, so to speak, in terms of cost. The Astros, at least according to one website, said slightly high they paid on Correa is what they called it.
Very, very low prospect, but because they're taking on so much of the money, they're going to be in that luxury tax situation, which is interesting also because Jim Crane seems to only want to go to that space if he feels very confident about the player
or the
circumstance.
That's why I was asking about the boogeyman.
Yeah.
Does he feel like he's got it? And then slightly low on Sanchez. We'll see. But let me ask you this, because I think if you look at the lineup, and this, I put together a little lineup, just my thoughts.
Okay.
Let's say you get Jeremy Pena.
Okay? Yes.
He's leading off. Jose Altuve.
Okay.
Carlos Correa. Jesus Sanchez. Cam Smith. Christian Walker, Victor Caratini DH, Yonner Diaz, Taylor Trammell. I don't mind that. And that doesn't even count Yordan, who's not back yet.
Can you give it to me one more time?
It doesn't count Ramon Urias. It doesn't count Mauricio Dubon or Jake Myers, who hasn't come back. So what I'm saying is your depth is better, but here's the lineup again. How does this grab you? Jeremy Peña, Jose Altuve, Carlos Correa, Jesus Sanchez, Cam Smith, Christian Walker, Victor Caratini, Yonner Diaz, and then Taylor Trammell. I don't mind that.
No, I mean,
I don't mind that.
I think you feel a little bit better about like having more portions of your lineup that are dangerous.
Yeah,
absolutely. I do think that is a lot better of what you're looking at. And I think that matters a lot, a good amount. So look, I'd be lying to get out here and tell you that the Astros did not make a significant move in order to give themselves a better opportunity to compete. I just don't think that they're far and ahead better, especially when you're far and away rather better than the rest of the AL, especially the ways that though everybody was in an arms race. The AL looks like a murderer's row of teams.
Yeah, now. And a lot of them tried to get better and did get better.
100%. From the 832, y'all crazy. The infield will be nice next season. Walker at first, Paredes at second, Peña at shortstop, Correa at third. I mean, maybe you want to move Paredes at second. I'm still not sure if that's necessarily the move that they want to make. But look, we'll see what happens when they get there. For the remainder of the season, this is what they rock with. And I think the pitching still remains a little bit of a question. But hey, they seem to feel confident that what they're getting back is something that they can rock with. And
that's what this whole deal hinges on, right? What those guys coming back are going to look
like. 100%.
Like, no matter Correa, that's a big help. No matter anything else, you know, that makes this team better. If they don't get one or two of those guys, that's all we're asking. If, you know, to perform at a high level, it's going to be a tough road.
I mean, Correa coming back, and they're really also depending on Correa coming back and getting back to his old ways in friendly confines, because he's had an up and down season this year with the Twins. It's one of the reasons why the Twins are willing to, you know, try and get off of the money that they've given him for the next 3 years.
Yeah.
But they're hoping that you get that back. If you do get that back, hey, maybe you can score in a different way. That'd be great. But what kind of offense do you anticipate? Like, you read off the lineup, and I do think that's a level of danger.
No Yordan, no Dubon.
How much better are you? Is the question. Are you a top 10 offense in baseball? Are you a top 12 offense in baseball? And what does that do difference versus, you know, being a team that was just beating teams with defensive pitching?
Right. No, I think that's more than fair. It's getting real interesting, though, and I'm really just making the moves. And as I mentioned, everybody thinks they have a chance. The Astros are right there. I think, you know, it clearly makes them better. Again, what are those pitchers going to do? That's what I need to know.
That remains the question. Yeah. And hopefully we'll see. Again, Dana Brown gives you some feeling that that's going to happen sooner rather than later, of seeing at the very least Arrigetti. Then after that, Javier, and after that, Garcia. And I would love to hold him to it, because we've been waiting all season long to see some of that come back. But there you go. That's it seems like a lot of people, somebody said it's about power needed in the bat. And yes, Correa does bring some of that. Steve on the YouTube says Astros will need to get at least 88 to 91 wins and at least get to the ALCS. I imagine they're saying, like, to validate what's happening here. And from the 713, Astros have the best defense. They have the best pitching rotation. They also have the best bullpen. I think the Evil Empire is back.
I don't know about the pitching. We have to find out. They're at the top end. They're dang good.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see what we ultimately have with this Astros team, especially once you get some of these new assets in and play a little baseball.
Yeah.
All right. You're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Appreciate you rocking with us on this Friday here in the loop. Coming up next, let's get into what's popping. All right. Let's talk about what's popping here in the loop on Sports Radio 610. Obviously, finally got a chance to talk a little bit about the trade deadline moves for your Astros. I think generally the sentiment for us on the show is like it. I don't know that I want to jump to love it, but I think that much needed bats.
Yeah.
We'll see if they're ultimately able to do the things that's necessary, especially I'm intrigued. You're going to have a lot more second base Altuve. And does this mean that, thing that you did, we made a lot of noise about moving him to left field in order to kind of help you be better on the infield. Are you taking a knock there? Does Correa's move to third base, which it seems like he's been trying to do, like, does that help the defense show up better and make it look a little bit more like when he was a Gold Glover? Or do you now have two guys on the infield where defense can be a little sketchy. Like, those are things also that hamper your pitching and your ability to stop runs.
No, I think you and I are kind of on the same page. Like, emotionally, in terms of nostalgia and other things, it's exciting. It's great to have Carlos Correa back. But once you get into the nitty-gritty, and I'm looking more on the pitching side, you're looking more on the infield side, but we both recognize
I think we meet in the middle there.
Both sides. But you're right. You know what? You know, we may end up, saying, was the Altuve to left field decision a good one? You know,
that is something that there's been people that have asked the question.
Was it right? Because they've been trying to avoid getting him out there a lot more lately, and he's going to be playing a lot more second base. And they tried to get him out of second base, so that's part of it.
Can I say though? Yeah. I actually very much prefer them doing this than going and doing the starting pitching with no bats.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
I think that what they did here is, I think, much more tenable. It just, again, hinges on, as you said, Arrighetti, Javier, Garcia.
That's it, man.
Come through, fellas.
Yeah, that's it.
Come through, fellas.
Yeah.
And then also, you're gonna need Yordan. Hey, buddy. We're still waiting on you.
If you get Yordan, everything changes, obviously.
And for that reason, CBS Sports considers the Astros a winner.
Yeah.
I think that is a fair way to look at it for the trade deadline. Were there other winners or losers for you on the trade deadline? Because, I mean, there's a lot of them felt like they existed in the AL.
Yes, and again, it kind of points back to, they did well, but everybody was making moves, man. Everybody was trying. Everybody in the American League thinks they have a legit chance to win.
Not everybody. Looking at you, Angels.
Everybody at the top. And the Twins, boy. The Twins just about.
Yeah, the Twins deplete. I saw some season ticket holders cancel their season tickets off of the trade deadline that the Twins had.
Yeah.
Selling everything that wasn't bolted down to the stadium.
Yeah, no, they absolutely should have. I think, obviously, the Yankees, Tigers would be at the top of the list with what they did in terms of baseball at large. National League, the Padres are not messing around. The Padres are definitely making some moves, and they managed to keep Cease, even though they were trying to find something else. But I think it starts there. The American League is going to be wide open, and a lot of people – oh, Mariners. What am I thinking? Mariners as well made a big move.
Dare I say, Rangers did a little bit of something. Now, they overpaid pretty heavily for Merrill Kelly.
They had to.
But, look, I'll just put it like this. And they are currently like no games back in the wild card, so that's something that they're contending for. Their starting rotation of the pitchers that they could throw out there in any particular series in the postseason is scary.
Who scares you more?
What, between like DeGrom and Merrill Kelly?
No, and Mariners and Rangers. Because to me, it's the Mariners. Getting that extra bat was huge for them. And they already have pretty good pitching.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
I was going to say, like, the history with the Rangers kind of could be something that you look at, but I think you might be right in that regard. But there you go. That's what's happening there with some of the trade deadline stuff. Astros back in action tonight, facing off against Alex Bregman and the Red Sox.
Yeah, that's going to be so cool with the Correa back and that whole reunion of sorts that they're having. I think, look, what we're looking at right now is just a fight down to the wire. The best thing the Astros have going for them right now is they've managed to keep this five-game lead despite some struggles, despite, you know, slumping, losing, what, five in a row at one point, six in a row, and still being able to have that five-game lead. I think that's going to be huge as you go down the stretch.
Yeah. Some other things that are popping. I wanted to mention this around the NFL, but we got a chance to sit down with Nick Cayley. Instead, we got a little bit of a football last night. How much did you take in of the NFL Hall of Fame game?
About what I said, about a quarter. But then, hey, man, virtual measurement. I'm in. 100%.
That's what I was going to get to.
100%. It was awesome. It was easy. It was efficient. The graphics were good. I don't think, and I know one of your sort of questions, if not concerns, was, all right, you know, there's a lot of bodies in there. That didn't seem to be an issue at any point.
It was a kind of an open field tackle, and it was clearly a first down, but I imagine they ran it out there to, you know, give it a little bit of a – just put it out there. Put it on the TV broadcast. Yeah. Let everybody see it. I'm still intrigued as to, like, how it's actually working and how actually accurate it is.
When there is a pile, you mean?
Yeah.
When it is, like, bodies piled up on the goal line or something?
I still want to know exactly how accurate it is, or how much they are working off of just the spot that they are ultimately given by the NFL. However, you know, it did look clean.
It was clean.
And I'm
fast.
Interested. I was like, how fast did it feel like to you? Because it did seem like it took a little bit longer than, like, you know, what I imagined it to. And maybe I'm just leaning off of the tennis where it's pretty instantaneous.
Oh, yeah.
But it didn't take forever. Like, I imagine I was trying to, in my head, kind of count off, well, how long would it have taken for them to take the old dudes and get the chains and the sticks and run them out to the middle of the field for the measurement?
Oh, it was faster than
and
that.
And it felt like it was faster.
It was absolutely faster than that. It did kind of make me feel bad for the guys that are standing on the sideline. They're like, yeah, we're here if they need us. but they're dinosaurs, I guess.
Coming to a football field near you, automated. I feel like the more and more that we automate things, the more enticing it seems that we're getting, that we're getting more automation in sports.
Mm-hmm.
I think more people are in on it. How about you?
Oh, you know me. I loved it. I loved it immediately. All that stuff, I think it should be used in college, for goodness sakes. And I don't see where it would be that difficult. To implement.
Okay. All right. Some other things that are popping. Another day of practice done here at training camp. And all right. So how would you characterize the way that camp went today?
I think it was you know why it was? It didn't look as bad as Wednesday. They weren't throwing the ball as long. Because they had what, 6 or 8 deep balls in a row? It was almost like it was scripted. Well, it was scripted, but it was almost like they were determined to try to take some shots in Wednesday's practice. So it was like the ball's up. You see the DB, wide receiver open, the DB closing and pick, or the ball's up and they're taking a deeper drop and all of a sudden sack or what would have been a sack. Whereas today it was more short routes. It was more, red zone and all that. The defense still dominated. The defense still absolutely dominated. And what stood out to me as much as anything is, we know what Will Anderson and Daniel Hunter, how good they are. Will Anderson had his battles with Ursary at right tackle when he was facing him. But against the run, he was handling Ursary pretty easily. And that's just part of the development. You know, like when they were running the run plays here, and I was watching it, we were in the middle, I think, of an interview, and I was kind of keeping an eye on it. I was like, oh, boy. they can't get a yard. If that was a real take-them-to-the-ground play, it would have been right at the line of scrimmage or maybe a 1-yard gain.
Yeah, we talked to Nick Haley. Yeah. I imagine we might hear a little bit more from Nick Haley on the podium. And he can't have been happy with this offensive line. I know he's harping on fundamentals, but I think the results of what you're seeing early are still something where I go, even as it feels like we're starting to find an offensive line, whoever, no matter if you mix it up, you got to be able to protect the quarterback and give him a little bit more time. And it still feels like the defense is meeting at the quarterback. In addition to now, also on a day where the secondary, I think, was beating up your pass catchers as well.
Yeah, they were breaking on the ball, breaking up passes, two or three interceptions mixed in there. I'll say it again. I mean, it's way, way early. They haven't even played a preseason game, but I think this. I've almost seen enough to think they have. Obviously the win healthy. They have every piece on this defense. They have everything they need.
They do.
They have everything they need.
I realized the thing I wanted to talk about, we went into the automatic replay at the Hall of Fame game. How about Trey Lance?
In
the Hall of Fame game.
Yeah.
He looked really good. It was a very big, dominant play game.
Was like 149 yards passing?
He had a good amount of yards. And he looked good. And they mentioned it on the broadcast, Mike Tirico, Chris Collinsworth. They mentioned it that that's a man that has not played a lot of football, but he's talented. And he was showing that. I imagine there's someone somewhere still falling for it, right? Like, oh, well, if you just give Trey Lance an opportunity. But he did the things that you have to do in that type of game, a 34-7 victory by the Chargers
Jim
over
Harbaugh
the Lions.
He just, whether he's sincere or not or really believes it or not, he just, like, does everything he can to just, put confidence in these guys. Like, he was slapping him on the shoulder pads like he was, Justin Herbert and all this other stuff, and you the man, and pointing at him and everything else. By the way, I just got an update here from Will Kunkel was reporting this. He was actually counting at today's practice, which just makes me feel even worse. As I said, it was bad, but not as bad. Apparently, from his perspective, C.J. Stroud would have been sacked nearly 10 times today.
Yep.
It's not all on the offensive line, he said. The coverage was excellent, too. Yeah, that's why you come off the field and you're an offensive coach, you're like, I'm not in a great mood right now. I'm not in
so
a great
again,
mood right now.
Salute to Nick Cayley for giving us what he did because he had good
reason.
He
pulled it out.
to not be all too happy. I mentioned the Hall of Fame, Hall of Fame game, Hall of Fame enshrinement coming up tomorrow. Mm-hmm. That's 11 a.m. Central Time on NFL Network, Fox, and ESPN. Is there anyone in this class that you are most excited to see, especially giving their enshrinement speech? I know that we've got a pretty cool class of four: Eric Allen, Jared Allen, no relation, Antonio Gates, and Sterling Sharp. You needed me to say that, no relation. I know that you thought for a second that they might be brothers.
I was thinking it. I'm not really like Sterling Sharp, you know, obviously because we talked yesterday with all the news breaking and all that. If Shannon's there, maybe it's a distraction. I still think Sterling Sharp's going to be interesting because he was not Shannon Sharp as a player.
No.
He was very close-vested, didn't talk a lot. It's going to be interesting to see how he reacts. And Jared Allen was the exact opposite. I mean, I know he was talking a little bit yesterday. Jared Allen's going to be fun. I was also looking at next year's class, you know, that are going to be eligible.
Yeah.
Larry Fitzgerald will be eligible next year. That's got to be, I mean, first ballot, right?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, that's got to be first
I mean,
ballot.
We were talking about this in a different way. Mm-hmm. Was it a few weeks ago?
Yeah.
Larry Fitzgerald was my third best wide receiver that's ever played the game.
And I didn't argue too much. I think there can be an argument, but I agree by and large.
Yeah, so yeah. Him and Drew Brees are going to be guys that are first-year eligible. It feels like they have the highest percentage chance of getting in, and they probably should.
Mm-hmm.
This is one where I'd like to get your thought process on it, because next on the list of guys who are first-year, Jason Witten,
mm-hmm.
tight end for the Cowboys.
Does
he strike you, I mean, not even first ballot,
as a Hall of Famer?
Because that's one of my hot takes, is I feel like he is a lot more borderline than I think people talk about him as.
Well, I won't call it a hot take because I'm right there with you. I think he's in the Hall of really, really good, but is he in the Hall of Fame? Just out of curiosity, what's the percentage they have on
him? They have him as a 40% chance for the Hall of Fame. I don't know if that's for a Hall of Fame in his first year or if they're just that's just in general. But these are first-year guys, and that's the percentage that was put on him, 40%.
Yeah. When you look at the tight ends and what they've been able to do, how does he compare? Because I don't think it's in the same class. It's really, really good, but I don't think it's the same class.
This does give me an opportunity as some other first-year Hall of Fame eligible players now, once we get past this 2025 enshrinement. One of the Pouncey boys, Marquise Pouncey, LeSean McCoy, Phillip Rivers, mm-hmm. Geno Atkins, Greg Olsen, who a fantastic broadcaster, Julian Edelman, Dez Bryant. How do you feel about Frank Gore? Like, I feel like that's one of those, you can learn a lot about somebody and how they feel about football by just hearing how they feel about Frank Gore.
Longevity, man. I mean, how much value do you put on longevity?
That is exactly what I'm trying to get to.
And that's the question that the Hall of Fame voters are going. And I'm not trying to dodge the question.
Yes,
because
you are.
Because I go back.
You hear him dodging,
because
right?
I go back and forth on this. I think he should be a Hall of Famer. And I know you don't. Or at least I think you don't.
I love Frank Gore.
But do you think he should be in the Hall of Fame?
Yes.
Oh, you do? Okay. Yes. Okay.
Yes.
I thought you were going to end up on the other side of that.
No, I love Frank
I
Gore.
Think the longevity, lots and lots of yards, is going to be in his favor. And you should get credit for that. Because a lot of people say, well, this guy would have been a Hall of Famer had he played two more years. Well, Frank Gore played, what, 15?
And the tough part about him is that he's just not he's not a guy who you look at and you go, was he the absolute best in the league for a long period of time?
And that's the argument against him.
But just continue to be one of the better ones for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
And I see you, Cornbread. No, it's not called the Hall of Longevity, but that's all a part of it, especially when you get to a place where you're allowing guys who have had short tenures but also very good. I think that then you kind of stretch and pull a little bit. We'll see ultimately. That's for them to decide in the years to come. And real quick before we go, I have not given the Dynamo a lot of love. Last month has been rough for them. I think it's three losses and a draw, both in league play and also in League's Cup play. They have a League's Cup match tonight at Shell Energy Stadium versus Mazatlán. So best of luck to the Dynamo.
They played America, tonight. Was that right?
They did play Club America, and as you might imagine, did not go well for them.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, so thoughts with our guy Ben Olsen and the squad as well as they continue to try and get back to winning ways. All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, I think we should hear from Nick Cayley. We talked to him, but I think also him on the podium adding more information, especially on a day where the offense did not have their best one. Let's hear what he had to say next.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.